Taylor Gagg, who drives it through.
We had the high notes on the park. That's how we became a great team together, you know. It was just unfortunate we never won anything.
Men's in trouble, if he kicks! The super sub has done it again! And Mullerwell are back in front.
Without supporters, you cannot play a game. They are a very, very important part of the club.
Jukovic on the chase, might get there. Handel is with it. Jukovic! Oh, wow! Oh, wow! Lukas Jukovic!
I remember to this day, it was unbelievable, and that's another reason I love going back to Fir Park, because you do get to interact with the supporters again, who were wonderful for me.
Chance here for Motherwell. This is Pettigrew, outnumbered though. Still has it. Chance of a lifetime for Pettigrew, and it is this!
Yeah. Obviously, being on the podcast is everything I've dreamed of.
Close to the middle though, Marvin Johnson. Defenders backing off. To good up for that chin! And there goes! Misjudged by Bell! Fir Park! Twisting! Shouting! Shaking!
Hello and welcome to the MFC podcast. Today myself, Jay and Buster will look back on a busy week at Fir Park. And in the closing stages of the podcast, Kilmarnock season ticket holder John Rushbury will join us to look ahead to Motherwell's meeting with Kilmarnock on Saturday. Guys, how are we all?
Yeah, not bad.
Getting by.
Good, well, we'll start with the league game first and foremost. A 2-1 defeat at McDermott Park on Saturday. Jay, it was an awful second half. After 45 minutes of real promise, we got ourselves ahead through Louis Moult. Should have went 2-0 up shortly afterwards. And then just faded away. Some poor decisions by the manager, particularly with poorly timed substitutions. Head-scratching substitutions, which he's become a bit renowned for. And for the second week in a row, we found ourselves losing from a winning position.
Yeah, I mean, you'll be able to, you know, shed more light on the game itself, because obviously you were there. I didn't make it. You know, last week in the podcast, I sort of said it was a game that we should be looking to take something from, at least, because St Johnstone are, you'd imagine, if we've got sights set on top six, then that's the kind of side we need to be picking up points against. And I said last week that if the manager looked at what has happened so far this season, realised that the team he's putting out and the system he's trying to play that doesn't suit certain players, if he responded to that and if he was a bit more creative or tried different things and maybe put out a stronger side in a formation that suits the players we've got, then perhaps we would go on and get something. But before the game, you let us know from Perth that it was the same team and the same system, and I must admit, as soon as I heard that, I kind of assumed that we were going to get beat. So I wasn't too surprised on the overall result. Obviously, when you go ahead, you're then hoping that you're going to go on and either get a more comfortable lead or at least hold on to what you've got. But from what you're saying, it wasn't a particularly good second half. And, you know, we were talking last week about the whole Barra Clough out chat and how that's really premature. But, you know, the longer these kind of things go on, you're talking about poor decisions and things like that. It's those things that are the real sticking points. You know, going to McDermott Park, taking the lead and eventually losing 2-1 isn't a particularly... You know, obviously you don't want to lose a game, but it's not the worst result you've ever had. You know, it's a difficult place to go. St Johnstone are always, you know, up challenging for Europe and stuff like that. So it is a difficult place to go, but it's the manner of the defeat that you're talking about. You know, these strange decisions. For me, it's that, you know, again, as I said last week, square pegs and round holes that we seem to be doing, you know, putting McDonald back in the attacking mid and things like that. So I wasn't too surprised with the overall result. And overall, because of the manner we seem to have lost it, that is what is disappointing.
Basta, it really felt like a collapse being at the game. I don't know if you've had the chance to look back in the two goals that we conceded. Basically identical goals from opposite flanks, a low ball across the box, tucked away nicely. But our fullbacks getting nowhere near their men, and That's another concerning point. We've touched on the poor defending already this season. We can't continue to lose really soft goals.
No, you're 100% right. As you says, both of the goals were near enough identical. Mirror images, you know, if there was a mirror down the middle of the park, it just looks like you're looking at it from the other side. Nobody seemed to pick up McLean in the middle when the ball came across, basically, the yard or two every time. As you says, the fullbacks seem to be getting a bit of stick this year. You know, last year it was McManus and whoever he was playing centre halfway, because I think that changed two or three times. This year, a lot of people are focusing on the right back position. Stevie Hamill, you know, he puts in a good shift, but he's had to go off a couple of times injured. You know, is that having an effect on him as well? Joe Chalmers has come in, he's played left back now a couple of times, whereas we've maybe only seen him in midfield before. Again, it can't really be good having to change, you know, the players at left back there. But to be fair, it's kind of the right back position. It seems to be where teams are targeting as well. I think that does look like it's maybe going to be our weakest position in that, along the back four. So, you know, it's maybe time I had a look at seeing if we had maybe somebody like Luke Watt. Bring him in, give him a chance. I know you got a wee bit of run out there. But as you say, it's the whole thing again. When it came to it, seeing the team, I thought, fair enough. Maybe if he's going to change up the formation or something a bit, but it was downhearting to hear that it was the same team, same formation, and it's probably going to work out the same way as it had the last 3 or 4 weeks.
Jay, of course, managers always appear to have their favourites. Ian Barraclough has stuck by many of his own signings that he's brought in over younger players. We talked about that last week, and it suggested it was becoming a bit of a gripe amongst the supporters. And Saturday he made the change eventually, taking off Lionel Lainsworth and bringing on Jack Leach. That was despite the fact that Marvin Johnson was so far away from being involved in the game. It was unbelievable. It was such a poor decision. The fans made it very clear that they didn't want Ainsworth to go off, and it should have been Johnson. It's things like that that, when you go on to lose the game, that the supporters will remember.
Yeah, definitely. You're spot on there. Those are the kind of things that nobody really bothers about, nobody really picks up on when you're winning games and you're doing well. But you're right, when you're losing games and when people are paying more attention to things like the substitutions you're making, the players you're starting with, the system you're going with, because you're criticising it, you're looking for the reasons why things aren't going your way. And you're right, I think, I don't mind if a manager's got favourites, if he's got players that he trusts, if he's got players that he, you know, knows will do a job for him. You know, some of the best, you know, you look at guys like Mourinho with, you know, Terry and Drogba and Lampard and guys like that, you know, some of the best managers in the world have their favourites. That's not an issue. But in terms of the younger players, the one thing, and again, yeah, you're right, we touched upon it last week, is this ongoing feeling that we're kind of saying one thing and doing, you know, the complete opposite. So we've had all the rhetoric, particularly during the summer, about how, you know, young players are the future, how we need to bring through the young players, how we've got promise in under-20s there that can make the step up and they'll get given their chance. And not just from the manager, we've had it, you know, from Les Hutchison as well, you know, how this is the direction we need to go down. And yet we're not seeing that. We've brought in 3 strikers, 4 if you count McDonald re-signing, so we then have to farm Craig Moore, who featured heavily in the pre-season, probably should have been getting on opportunity this season. Instead, he's farmed out on loan. You're right, Jack Leach, you know, by all accounts, had a good game up at Inverness and was dropped purely because we brought in Jake Taylor on loan. You know, guys like Luke Watt, apart from last night at East Fife, you know, he's barely featured. Dom Thomas, who should be getting a lot more game time, particularly because Marvin Johnson, for me, this season has been relatively poor, both in terms of performance and his interest in the game. You know, he was substituted at half-time last night because of that, and then Dom Thomas comes on and does really well, and yet you kind of know for a fact that Johnson will be back in on Saturday. So I don't mind, you know, McCall, for instance, didn't blood youngsters, but then McCall, from what I can remember, didn't really make a great deal about it. You know, he didn't, in interviews and stuff like that, didn't kind of make a big show and dance about the fact that youth were going to get their chance. So you can kind of, you know, you could kind of forgive him that because he never claimed that's what he was going to do in the first place. But, you know, everybody at the club seems to be talking about how young players are the future and they'll be given their chance. And it's not happening. And you've now got the situation where, from what I've, you know, heard, we're still on the lookout for one or two players. They might come in. So if you get another one or two players and Pearson comes back from injury, you can basically kiss goodbye to any of our young players getting, you know, a decent shot at it this season.
Jay's already mentioned Jake Taylor there, Buster. He was sent off for a second booking. The second one in particular really got my back up with a blatant dive in the penalty box. It was the only time I noticed he was playing, which makes it so much worse. He's come in and, for all we said, he looks like a tidy enough player. He's come in at the expense of a younger player who's got a pivotal season ahead of him in terms of whether he will or he won't break through and become a part of the Motherwell first team squad, or perhaps end up like Stuart Carswell did last season, where he eventually dropped down the league to join St Mirren. It's a real shame that Leitch's development's going to stall at the expense of a loanee who currently isn't contributing very much.
I think that's the issue there. You know, from the games I've seen, and obviously from what I've heard, he's been largely anonymous. So I think that's obviously where the problem's coming in. That's where Leitch's development's been brought up. You know, if this guy was coming in and he was doing really well, no one would bat an eyelid at the fact that Jack Leitch wasn't getting a game. So I'm all for, you know, the talk of developing the youth and things like that. But I think even if you look at guys like Louis Moult and, you know, Wes Fletcher, they're bringing them in at relatively young ages, signing them up on relatively long contracts for ourselves, and obviously looking to sell them on as well. You know, I see that as a sort of developing the younger footballer that way as well. But the problem with Taylor is he is kind of young. He's a loanee though, so he's not a player. He's been largely anonymous, and that's why Jack Leitch has been brought in. Jack Leitch, you know, he started really well, had a couple of injuries, and, you know, for the few appearances I've seen of him since, you know, he's not made any major mistakes. So it is kind of frustrating to see him not have that chance. Again, I'm when he was brought on against St Johnstone, you heard Barakoff say, you know, it was to help shore up the midfield. I know people were saying it was a strange one. As I say, I wasn't there myself, so I couldn't comment on it, but he is somebody I'd like to see more of. But you know, these guys who are in charge of the team, because Barakoff will be taking a bit of the advice for, whether it be even Craigan as well, and, you know, Robinson, you know, these guys see these players every day, so it's got to make you wonder, you know, if you know, they have that potential that we all think they do.
Well, I suppose if there was going to be a time to bring in younger players, a trip to League 2 East Fife perhaps would have been regarded as it. On the other hand, on the back of a few disappointing defeats, Ian Barakoff, he didn't really shuffle his pack last night, Jay. Four changes, a pretty experienced starting 11, it has to be said. And on the whole, it was a horrendous night. I actually kind of felt quite embarrassed watching some of the celebrations from both the players and the supporters following the match, because East Fife really should have their name in that hat for the next round draw.
Yeah, without question. It was really, really poor. Firstly, in the team selection, I mean, I think from what Barraclough said after the match as well, you know, about it being a potential banana skin, allied to the fact that he has, you know, started to come in for a bit of criticism, it was no surprise that he went for, you know, what you would consider a fairly experienced side, because he obviously, you know, wanted to give himself the best chance to get the job done and to kind of minimalise the risk as much as possible. But yeah, you're right. East Fife, basically it just came down to fitness. It was basically purely because we're a full-time football side that we're in the hat for the next round, because East Fife were the better team, without question. And it wasn't just, you know, sometimes you get games like that. I remember we're Motherwell fans, we've had plenty of games where we've been knocked out of the cup. And there are times when you can just kind of accept that for whatever reason, your opponent just were better. They just wanted it more. But last night, it was just really, really disappointing for so many different reasons. I mean, we were at the game and we spoke about it after about 5 minutes. I think I tweeted about it, the fact that you saw the players took to the park thinking it was going to be a walk in the park. That was it. They turned up thinking this is a shoo-in. I think within the first 5 minutes, you had Louis Lang trying to skin somebody in Edgy's own box. You had Lionel Ainsworth trying to do keepy uppies at the touchline. You had Marvin Johnson with absolutely no interest in tracking back or doing any defensive work whatsoever. You just get the feeling within about 5-10 minutes of watching that Motherwell side that we had turned up and taken to the field just assuming that we just had to be there and that was us, job done. And it just wasn't that at all. We were outclassed in terms of the effort put in. Some of the football is fife. I mean, you had to remind yourself that you were watching a third division side. I mean, Nathan Austin was different class, and the fact that he got a standing ovation from the Motherwell support when he was substituted tells you all you need to know. It was just bizarre. It was we don't deserve to be in the next round. It was a really, really poor performance. And all of, you know, I think for me, Dom Thomas was the only sort of shining light from the game. Comes on at half time for Johnson, and I think we've got a lot to thank him for to actually get through to the next round, because he was the only player that went out there and was really worthy of pass marks at the end of the game, which for a yes, these games can always be a bit dodgy, you know, it's a cup tie, they're up for it, but you're looking for a bit of professionalism for your players, and we just didn't have it last night at all. Louis Lang and Josh Fort in particular were just torn to utter shreds by part-time third division footballers, and it was embarrassing at times to watch. And in fact, I think, you know, we spent most of the second half and extra time just in hysterics, just laughing, because it was one of those games where if you didn't laugh then you would cry, because it was just, we were just really, really poor. And again, if it wasn't for the fact that we train properly and have a full-time football side, then there's no way we'd be in the next round, and we don't deserve to be.
Yeah, that's it for me. You go to a lower league side, you expect it to be long ball tactics from the opposition played in a bog of a football pitch. The park was like a bowling green. East Fife played all the football while we tried long ball tactics, and it just was everything it shouldn't have been. It could have potentially been a night to raise our spirits and give us a bit of hope going into a crucial, crucial game on Saturday. Instead, we had to endure an extra half hour. It was almost kind of, you felt proud of Dom Thomas, the way that he reacted when he came on, because his head clearly hasn't dropped, despite the fact he's been overlooked. And he's got every right to feel like he's been overlooked unfairly as well, because there is absolutely no way that he should not be starting games for Motherwell Football Club on the basis of his performances this season, and on the basis of certain other people that play in his position so far this season too. For Johnson, 45 minutes was almost too much. Again, on the back of such a poor performance against St Johnstone, I don't know whether fitness is a bit of an issue. He wasn't played regularly in pre-season. He's not come back to this season anywhere near the player that finished off with two amazing performances at Ibrox. It's so disappointing to watch.
Yeah, I mean that's the thing. You don't want to start isolating individual players, and you're right, it might be a fitness issue, he might be carrying a knock, he might just be low in confidence, whatever it is. But the simple truth is that he's not playing particularly well. He was subbed at half-time against East Fife. Dom Thomas offers you that spark. He is the kind of player that can make things happen, and he deserves to start the game. And we've already got into that sort of routine so far this season where you kind of already know. I mean, don't get me wrong, there is a chance Dom Thomas might start on Saturday, but you kind of already know in the back of your mind that you'll have Ainsworth on one side and you'll have Johnson on the other, regardless. And that's not where you want to be. You want to have a culture at your football club where your young players are going to come in, they're going to do well, and they're going to have a place if they earn it. And that's the sort of the rhetoric that we've been given. So there's no reason why Dom Thomas shouldn't be on the team, because Marvin Johnson isn't the same player as last season. That's not to say that we've been playing the kind of football that perhaps suits our wingers. I mean, you're talking about the long ball tactics there. One thing I've noticed this season, and I wasn't sure earlier in the season whether it was just because we were running out of ideas as the game went on, but we do seem to be in the habit of particularly our centre halves just trying to ping, you know, long diagonal balls out to the wingers. And as I said, it happened at Tynecastle, for example, and at the time you kind of just thought, right, we're chasing the game, we don't have very many ideas, we're just lumping the ball. But on Tuesday night, you kind of got the impression, because it started quite early on, you kind of get the impression that that was an actual tactic, as though we're going out and one of the tactics, or one of our style of play is going to get Louis Lang or McManus or Kennedy, as it was last night, to just launch the ball at Ainsworth or Johnson. It doesn't really make any sense, partly because our central defenders aren't good enough to have that, you know, accurate distribution, and because Ainsworth and Johnson aren't those kind of wingers. They're not going to, you know, jump up and win a header or anything like that. So it's completely counterproductive to what we're trying to do. So I think you need to factor that in terms of Marvin Johnson's performances. But yeah, he hasn't been good enough. Even when you were talking earlier, Buster was saying about the fullbacks, about how both St Johnson goals were from the same position, and perhaps that was down to the fullbacks. I think a lot of it's to do with the wingers we're playing with. You know, Ainsworth has never been particularly hot on tracking back, and Johnson this season hasn't been remotely interested in any defensive duties. So it's no surprise that our fullbacks are constantly exposed to the opposition. And you know, even going into a game on Saturday, which we'll obviously talk about shortly, I mean, you're playing against a side that are down, that are negative, that are, you know, really looking as though we should be beating them. And yet, if they approach the game and realise that they can get in behind our wingers and attack our fullbacks, then we'll be in trouble.
Buster,
I'll ask
you a quick question before you go into that. Jay talked about the kind of element of surprise with introducing Thomas and not sticking with the tried and tested, which has been Ainsworth and Johnson. Do you think that other clubs have perhaps cottoned on to the danger that both Johnson and Ainsworth presented, particularly in the high profile surroundings of the playoff final, and have maybe upped the ante in these guys and are almost kind of bullying them out of the game now?
I think that's definitely a factor, to be fair. We've seen it as well, even going far back as Chris Humphrey. There'd be, you know, 3 or 4 weeks where Humphrey would be double teamed, then, you know, somebody would let it slip. Even if it was Celtic, you know, he'd run riot against Hezaghiri with Celtic, and then the next week we'd be up against Dundee United and they'd double team him again. So I think it's, you know, it's something which anybody, you know, worth their money, cottons on it, they set a plan to stop it as well. So I think you're right. I think that does have a, you know, a big factor on the fact that we don't seem to be getting the, you know, working the balls to them. As Jay says, you know, they seem to be sort of diagonal balls. Johnson's no one a header all season. And as we mentioned before, he seems to duck out of the way of the ball. So, yeah, I think you're right there. But also, just to go back to what Jay was saying with the, you know, the wingers helping out the fullbacks. I was going to mention it earlier, and I sort of missed it, but I think that's the problem with the formation that we're trying to play. We don't have the sort of wide players who will come back if we try to play 4-4-2, and that's why we seem to be trying to, you know, squeeze McDonald into a sort of central midfield role, or, you know, central attacking midfield role, whatever you want to call it. And I think it's just because he knows that Johnson, Ainsworth, they're not going to cover up, they're not going to come back in there and, you know, fill in any spaces.
Jay, just one more point on these Fife game, and that was Kieran Kennedy came in for Stephen McManus at the back. Unspectacular debut, but given the poor performance of Louis Lane last night, maybe it gives the manager a wee bit of a headache, or maybe it doesn't, given that we've just talked about he seems very stubborn in changing his settled 11. But I think Kennedy's certainly proven that he can come in and do a decent job.
Yeah, I mean, he wasn't, you know, he certainly wasn't poor. You know, he didn't do anything great, but I suppose, you know, if you're a centre half, then, you know, if you don't stand out, then it's not necessarily a bad thing. I thought he looked decent enough. You know, a Tuesday night game away to East Fife in the Cup isn't the best place to judge someone making their debut, particularly when, you know, the more established first team players around them are getting absolutely torn to shreds. So yeah, I mean, I'd be quite comfortable from what I saw with Kennedy, maybe alongside McManus. I do agree that Lang, you know, I mean, Lang's been solid so far. You know, he's been a decent player. I wouldn't start berating him or dropping him purely on the basis last night, but he was absolutely horrendous. He just wasn't at the races last night. And so if you're going to drop someone based on how poor they played, then I would suggest that it would be Kennedy in for Lang. But as you're saying, I think that we've got a settled team, particularly in terms of the back four. So I wouldn't expect that to change in the slightest for Saturday.
Yeah, certainly not. We're not in the game of berating our own players, but I think when the performances and the warning signs are so clear, even this early on in the season, that we're well aware that things need to improve, and I think certain individuals possibly do need to look at themselves and up their game if we're going to challenge at the right end of the table, or at least for a mid-table, top six type position. Already, it feels like a bit of a dogfight, even five games into the season.
It certainly will be if things don't go our way on Saturday. I mean, as we were saying last week about the Barraclough out chat, I don't subscribe to that at all. But I think for me, Barraclough has proven so far that he talks a good game. The way that McDonald's comments about him seem to suggest that he gets on well with him. I think he manages to get, at least last season, he managed to get the best out of Ainsworth, so that suggests he's maybe got some half-decent management skills about him. The games against Rangers, you know, the idea of even putting McDonald in the way he played, in that role, and the way he played against Rangers, he played it to utter perfection, so he's shown that he's got a bit of tactical know about him. But what I'm looking for is, this stubbornness that he seems to have to get ditched, because there does seem to be this lineup that he is adamant he's going to play. He's going to play these players in it, even although it's not working. And if he doesn't change that, if he doesn't show that he has the ability to adapt to who he's playing against and to adapt to players not playing well, etc., then there has to be serious questions about it. So we've seen, for me, I've seen enough. As I said last week, it was such a hard start, it was difficult to judge, but we've now played a team that we should have been looking to do better against if we're going to be top six this season at McDermott Park, and then a third division side last night, and both games haven't been good enough. So we need to respond to that. We need to see a team on Saturday that, if it's the same personnel, it perhaps has to be two up front with McDonald up alongside Malt rather than in the hole, because that's not working, or different personnel because it's not working, and that's fine. You can put out a team that doesn't work, players don't play well, but you then need to respond to it. That's what good managers do, and that's what I'm looking for from them.
Just to pick you up there as well, Jay, you says you don't expect the back four to change. I'm not part of saying we don't want a single MD out, but I take it you don't expect to see Luke Watt in the starting 11 then.
I don't know. As I said earlier, I don't think. I think I would like to. I mean, I certainly think he seemed to start coming into the team last season, of course, and then we seemed to be half decent at centre half for the under 20s. But as I said earlier, I just think that our youth system seems to be to sign young players, play them, and then say that that's us bringing through youth players. I don't expect to see a lot of, from what I've seen so far, I don't expect to see a lot of our young players used at all this season.
What's that? What's your take in Barraclough's position? I know we've already stressed that the negativity and towards both the performances on the park and the manager, then it's not helpful, but at 1-0 down last night, it felt quite intense, and the crowd really, really were dead against the manager. They did then boo us off at full time at 1-1, then applauded the team off the park when they won 3-1 after extra time. It was all a wee bit bizarre, but Saturday still seems like a must-win game for Ian Barraclough, even this early on in the season again.
I honestly believe it is, to be fair. I've always been in the, he's still got a lot to prove either way. I'm still sitting on the fence, basically. Every game goes past, though, you hear the same things after the game, you hear the same things before the game, and I'm tipping back off the fence, to be honest with you, falling on the side that it's not working for him. But as you say, he does some decent things at times, and you think, he's maybe going to start turning things around. He says, as Jay said, he talks a good game, but he repeats himself after every defeat just about. Even last night when I was watching the post-match interviews, he looked a lot angrier. People were saying he looked as if he'd run out of ideas or whatever, but I don't think that's what it was. I think he'd went through the players or something, because he looked a bit more, I'm going to say stressed, but I don't think that was because of, you know, the manner of the result, but I think it's because he just went through the players, and then he's come out and, you know, Flo's asking him a few questions about the game and stuff like that.
I wonder if it's been so close to the supporters as well last night, because there wouldn't have been many shouts that he didn't hear coming from their supporters.
You're right. As I watched the highlights as well, you could hear them all, even on the, I don't know who it is that records the highlights, but you could hear all the shouts as well there. So, as you say, he's going to hear these things. He will know these things anyway, to be honest with you. I think it's well known that, you know, the Motherwell media team at least keep up with, you know, everything that's going on, even on, you know, some of the forums and things like that. You know, they read their Twitters, they read their Facebooks. They see what people are saying. Yeah, exactly. They listen to ourselves. I think everybody, I was going to say, you know, I want them to do well, but, you know, who doesn't, to be fair? But it's one of the ones where if we don't start picking up results, it's just going to keep snowballing, and it's going to be hard for them.
Well, what we'll do is we'll look forward to the Kilmarnock game, and we'll invite in John as well. John, you've been listening into our negativity. Now we'll hear a bit of yours as well.
Evening, guys. Yeah, I mean, I'll have to be honest. I mean, I'm listening to you discuss Motherwell's start to season, and you talk about sort of at times being embarrassing, disappointing play, tactics, attitude of players. You know, it's only 3-4 games into the season. It's a must win, and that almost mirrors exactly how we fit in the stand ourselves at Rugby Park right now. It's exactly the same.
You guys were obviously in League Cup action last night. A 4-1 victory in the 90 minutes. Was it as straightforward as the result suggests?
Definitely not. I mean, the first sort of 30 minutes or so, Kilmarnock certainly had a bit more control of the ball, moved about quite well. What we did have last night, which was great, they did play a lot of our younger players. Certainly two or three of them came into the game, and they seemed a bit more hungry. Totally different to Saturday's net performance. So that was good. However, credit to Berwick Rangers, and particularly to Colin Cameron, who, you know, even though he's still at whatever age he is now, he's still a class act. And he had his players riled up for the game, got back an equaliser, and they had, you know, every bit of possession as Kilmarnock had. However, you know, playing against a lower league team, they started to tire a wee bit, and that's in the last 20 minutes where Kilmarnock took more control and started passing the ball a bit better, and then that's where the performance shone through at the end, and, you know, it did look an easier victory than it really was.
We kind of discussed it amongst ourselves that last night's game for Motherwell was a no-win occasion. Was that pretty much the same mentality amongst the Kilmarnock supporters going into that game?
Well, definitely. I mean, we only had less than 1,500 at the game last night. That says it all, really. You know, that's disappointing that the club decided you're still wanting to charge £15 to get into a second round League Cup match and against a lower league team.
Yeah, you know, I think the club has to...
Pardon?
Sorry, particularly when the team aren't playing well as well.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's such a bad start to the season that you think you have to try and get as many people in the door, you know, whether it's giving tickets to kids for free to get them in a midweek game, all these sort of things. You really want to try and get some support behind. To be fair to the support that were there, they certainly got behind the team. There wasn't the same anger as there had been from Saturday. And there was certainly no YouTube videos from last night, I can't imagine. It was definitely a very positive. There was only a shame that it was only less than 1,500 there.
Basta, I know that Jay's got quite a few Kilmarnock supporting friends, so I'll ask you the question. Were you surprised after the result they had against Celtic and then they came back against Partick Thistle that, well, I think everyone was surprised at the manner of the defeat to Ross County on Saturday, but did you not get the impression they were kicking on? I certainly did.
A bit, to be honest with you, but again, I've not seen much of Kilmarnock, to be fair, so you know my judgments are going to be based on what I'm hearing on the radio and things like that. But the opening day apparently was an absolute nightmare for Kilmarnock fans. Then, as you say, you know, they seem to sort of pick it up a bit. And then again on Saturday when I was listening to the radio as well, I can't remember who the BBC guy was, but the BBC guy was absolutely slating Kilmarnock. And then, as you say, you know, it prompted that guy to make that video on YouTube. But it was one of those ones where I thought, you know, they were picking up a wee bit, see how it goes. But then he just seemed to have, from what I heard again, just dropped right back into it. So, you know, it's one of the ones as well where you need a result, you need some goals. Who do you come to? It's us, isn't it? So we'll see what happens. I think it's going to be one of the ones where it could end up another shit fest, nine each, or it's, you know, it's going to end up six each or something like, you know, it's 12 mistakes and it'll end up six each.
Jay, I suppose Kilmarnock last season, they seemed very similar to ourselves in terms of their inconsistency, the some very poor performances, particularly towards the back end of the season. They just had a wee bit more about them to pull themselves out of danger of the playoff. They must be kicking themselves and missed out in that, actually, after watching our results. But I really believe that both teams would have a different complexion about them and push on after getting a real scare last season, but it certainly doesn't seem to have been the case.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I'm the same as Buster. I don't obviously know a massive amount about Kilmarnock or most other teams in Scotland out with ourselves. What I would say is I remember back when we were talking about who would take over for Stuart McCall, back when we were saying it had to be Mitchell van der Gag, and Big Matty Grant was talking about how we should perhaps look at Gary Locke because, you know, he'd done a good job at Hearts and things, and it was never one that really, you know, I never really subscribed to it. I think he's probably a half-decent coach, but I've never really, even at Hearts, you know, he had a good young team. But again, we had the same sort of situation back when, you know, when we were in administration and you had Pearson and McFadden and guys like that, and you were getting, you know, horse some games, but getting some good performances and some good results. Other times we finished bottom. And I think that's more to do with the circumstance. It's more to do with the youngsters rather than the manager itself. So I never really thought that Gary Locke did a fantastic job at Hearts. He's a manager I was happy we steered clear of. You know, perhaps it's unfair, but I think that, you know, the links to get to folk like Jim Jeffries, who I've never been a fan of, etc., I think would probably influence a lot of his mindset when it comes to being a manager. And when, you know, as manager of Kilmarnock, he's not somebody I've really kind of rated highly. When you're signing guys, I know it was a coaching role as well, but when you're signing guys like Lee McCulloch, you know, that to me is, you know, a kind of a Jim Jeffries type signing. So from the outside looking in, I'm not particularly surprised that Kilmarnock haven't started well, because I don't particularly rate Gary Locke. I do agree that, you know, both ourselves and Kilmarnock are similar type teams, but I would have been looking at us to finish above Kilmarnock this season.
John, we've talked a lot on the podcast already about how we expect to set up on Saturday. Is there any indications of how Gary Locke will be setting up?
I think after the performance of a couple of the younger players in midweek, I think that Slater will definitely come into the team. He had a real drive about him on Wednesday night, which wasn't there on Saturday. But the big problem for us is there's a definite difference in how we play at home and how we play away. There's a definite sort of negativity, if you want, when you're that alone. Whether they're nervous, the crowd are a lot of the time quite fickle, I suppose, and on Gary Locke's back quite early doors. In both games, we've conceded goals very early, and then suddenly you get one or two more senior players look quite disinterested. Whereas, you know, with one or two of the younger players coming in midweek there, I would definitely say that there's a good chance that he'll start Slater, and we'll see what happens. We might get the likes of young Kilty starting as well. He looked pretty good the other night as well. McKenzie, he was the only player probably on Saturday that out with Jamie McDonald. If I hadn't been for him, I think it would have probably been double figures on Saturday. That McKenzie was the only one that really looked as if he was up for it. And he's probably one player that I would say will be a standout on Saturday, because trying to get the ball out wide to him, he was coming in quite a lot as well. Did the same again last night, and that worked well for us. So there was a bit more movement last night. Stevie Smith looked a bit better. I think he just needs a few more games, and he'll maybe start to get back to the player that he was a few years ago. But at the moment, it's touch and go to see how that goes, to be honest.
A player that's, I think, Motherwell fans, some of them would have welcomed him back at Fir Park, others would have slandered on his face, is Callum Higginbotham. We all saw the penalty against Celtic, very audacious. It seemed a very strange decision that he came to Kilmarnock in the first place, given he was so scathing of the artificial surface during his time at Partick Thistle.
Definitely.
How's he settled in so far?
I was surprised that he came. He scored a magnificent goal on Wednesday night. I mean, it was top drawer, 25 yards in the top left hand corner. It was a great finish. But again, on Saturday, he looked disinterested. If things are going well, then he's up for it. But when the team 2-0, 3-0 down, he wasn't tracking back, he wasn't really sort of showing much effort, and that's where it's just disappointing at times. But like anything else, it'll be interesting to see how it happens over a fairly long season, and this is certainly going to be a long season, and the likelihood is I'll be surprised if we finish top six. I'll be amazed, but I just can't see it at the moment.
A lot of that sounds all very familiar, Jay.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. You need to kind of remind yourself that although things aren't particularly good for ourselves, if you know, things continue as badly for teams like Kilmarnock, then hopefully we might still be champing the door of top six.
John, just a quick question about something I heard on the radio as well. Kilmarnock don't have pay at the gate facilities. All the games are going to be tickets. What's happening there? What's that about?
Basically, what they've tried to do is it's cost cutting, trying to save on the sort of the manpower of how many people are at the turnstile. So what they've done is they've made the games ticket only. You can buy your tickets online, pick them up in the club shop or in the park hotel, and then on the day of the game at each stand there's also a small ticket booth at each stand as well, with sort of two sort of members of staff that you can pay at the gate. Because, I mean, bear in mind, we've got 3,000 season ticket holders, but we only had 3,500 at the game on Saturday, of which, what, I think there was 200 Ross County supporters. So there's not that many that are coming through the gate. So they had maybe six gates open for 200-300 people going through. It probably makes more sense to do it that way. It'll take a wee while to adjust. Believe it or not, there were a couple of queues early doors, I believe, in the first game. But it seemed to work fairly well against Ross County on Saturday. It worked even quicker when they opened the gates before half time, because most of the supporters had left by then, so.
But that's fair enough then. It was just, the way they described it on the radio was if, you know, you had to buy your ticket during the week, and then, you know, if you didn't get one, that was you could, as if there wasn't, you know, like a ticket booth, as you said, at the either end of the stadium.
The normal ticket booth is, which is opposite the Park Hotel, is open, and they've also opened one at the entrance to the East Stand as well, and this is a small ticket booth, just with two members of staff in it, and they just deal with one queue each, and it goes pretty quickly. So yeah, it's, I can't see any disadvantage to it, other than maybe people that are turning up waiting, there's maybe half a dozen people in a queue and get wet for 2 minutes. Putting somebody a bit, if we're putting us a larger team, perhaps Aberdeen or something like that, and it was a new year or something like that, and you had a number of extra supporters going to the game, that might be a sort of different story, but at the moment, it's not an issue.
That certainly sounds fine. As I say, it was just the way the BBC reported it, the good old BBC, yeah.
Absolutely.
John, it's normally quite a popular fixture for Motherwell fans going to Kilmarnock and vice versa. Would you expect a decent Kilmarnock travelling support on Saturday?
Definitely. I mean that's certainly the one thing that's Kilmarnock are still taking a fairly reasonable amount of supporters to away games. I see a lot of my friends are the boys that Jay knows are going to the game. They enjoy it. They've always enjoyed the hospitality for part. The games have always been reasonably decent. There's not been too many nil nils and stuff like that. So I would expect a fairly good crowd at Fir Park on Saturday.
And the Kilmarnock fans certainly not lacking passion, judging by the viral video following the result.
Gordon certainly had a sensational rant. I think it's probably the best way to describe it. But it just went viral. I mean, it was one of these things that, you know, he's one or two of these lines in it about fried food and bananas and porridge and stuff, just classic lines. And I mean, obviously he's passionate about it. There are a number of fans that are as well. Clearly you have that at every football club, but you know, to take it to that extent is everybody's different, I suppose, but it's certainly made for good viewing, and I think a lot of people in Scottish football could see themselves just wanting to do the exact same thing.
Guys, we'll finish up with some quick predictions ahead of the game. We'll start with our guest. You can go first, John, and then we'll get the negative one out the road, and then we'll get some positive ones in after that.
I'm going to go for Boydie scoring a last minute winner to win 1-0.
What's that?
I don't know, to be honest with you. These are the sort of things that I'm pretty poor at, and the reason that I'm pretty near the bottom of the prediction league. So I'm gonna be positive then, as you say, and I'm gonna say that we're gonna come out all guns blazing and we're gonna win 3-0.
Wow. Jay.
I think if Dom Thomas starts and Scott McDonald is either dropped or played up front where he's meant to be, then I'll go with a 2-0 Motherwell victory. But if it's, you know, ordinary, like, same service resumes, kind of this 4-5-1 formation with McDonald in the hole, then I'm going to go 1-1.
I'm hoping the Kamarnikov last Saturday turn up, and I'll go for a 2-0 victory, but I say that with absolutely zero confidence. John, thank you very much for your time. It's always really interesting having opposition fans on, and I hope you've enjoyed it as much as we've had enjoyed having you on.
I have indeed. Thank you very much for the invite, and good luck for the rest of the season, apart from Saturday.
Cheers.
Same goes to you guys. Shay, Busta, thanks as always.
Cheers.
No worries, thanks very much.
You've been listening to the MFC podcast. We'll be back on Monday. Until then, thank you and goodbye.